on your Uranius.
It's a whole mixed bag of goodies today.
Pretty sexy too. I hope you enjoy.
2SER 107.3.
There's only one reason to stay at home.
Rod of Northam, thank you for taking some time out, especially on your Tuesday here, to have a chat on The Band Next Door on 2SCR. Congratulations on your new record by Northam. It's the third release under that name now at the moment. The record's called Bring the Daylight, but you've been making music under the alias of Northam for many, many years, even dating back to, say, 2004, I think, were the earliest recordings. Do you still have the same undying passion that comes with wanting to write and perform music, or is it more still for you at the moment, like a background hobby more than anything else?
Oh, great question. With Bring the Daylight, I felt kind of more energized and up for it than at any time in the past. When I started writing this album, I didn't expect it to go the places that it did in the end. And it just felt like a kind of a journey piece as a musician and a songwriter, you know, to have collaborators come in and just level up the performance. And when it sort of started to get into that zone, I really came back to life. In a lot of ways, writing this album was yearning for a portal back to my own, you know, motivations and sense of intention, and in a lot of ways, like, back into a better headspace. When the performances started to level up and people were really kind of digging the material, and I was able to work more consistently with some people that I'd worked with a little bit in the past, I really, really became far more, I don't know, emotionally attached. It became far more of an important project for me, writing new music even now and feeling that sense of kind of excitement.
Excellent.
Is a good way to put it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Cool. So Northam takes its name from Northam Coast, Northam Cove, I should say. Yeah, like the mid-north coast or just the mid-coast of Australia, like around the Hunter region of New South Wales. You've been there a lot as a kid, but do you go back there now as you get older, or does that kind of tarnish the memory and then in a way as well tarnish the aesthetic of what Northam's music is?
Another great question. I go back there semi-frequently, probably not as frequently as I'd like to.
Okay.
That place still is quite sacred for me, and you know, I have a real sense of connection to the place and very grateful to have spent time up there. During the 80s, it was just such a wonderland, you know, being a 9-year-old or whatever and trekking around with my friends, having wars and stuff like that, as you do, and beach cricket and all the stuff that kind of, although those memories and those feelings are kind of encapsulated and are sort of kept alive with the Northam name and the music, going up there still evokes all of those same feelings, even so many years now after the fact. And in many ways, like when I go back, I always feel like a sense of trepidation that I have to leave, because you really get into a different groove and a different mindset there and different gears. The last time we were up there was over the new year. It was a bit rainy, so we ended up watching all of these old VHS tapes, like with the full family. We hadn't been able to get up there, you know, because of the pandemic, and it was just amazing. So I really deliberately called Northam after Northam Cove because, you know, I just wanted to name the project, you know, something authentic and that was really like quintessentially part of my life story. So in answer to the question, no, still the same feeling.
Said the term life story just then, and I've noticed in a way that these records that you've been making have been kind of snapshots of certain times in your life. You know, the first record was, say, 8, 9 or 7-year-old you with your BMX. The second record, Let Love Through, was more so the journeys of a troubled teenager. Where are you now with with this record, with Bring the Daylight, what does that reflect in your life at the moment?
Oh, I think it's just, it reflects kind of a coming into myself. It's taken a long time for me to get to a place where I feel comfortable in my own skin. You know, I think there's even a lyric in one of the songs called Trouble where it's like, if it wasn't my skin, I was walking within, you know. Bring the Daylight is just really a collection of songs that bring acceptance to the past and a sense of acceptance of self, and then projecting out and yearning for that sense of connection with others, love and empathy, really. It's one of those records that just really touches on that space. And it was a stargate I was trying to create, really, back into a better way of being, and it certainly proved to be that for me. So, yeah, I think it's coming into later life and feeling that sense of kind of gratitude and that sense of kind of contentment with the little things. And I think everyone during the pandemic had really kind of felt like they had to be on that same journey, so it's really giving voice to that.
I have trouble sometimes finding the joy in a lot of folk music. I kind of maybe have that sense of melancholy. It just seems to be the thing that comes out the most for me when listening to hazy bedroom folk music and talking to the musicians behind it. How do you not gravitate to falling in that relentless downward spiral that kind of goes with making like sad music? Do you have to focus more so on the positives that come with it than letting yourself get thrown off the garden path?
Oh, these questions are great. There's a few things to unpack with this. I often set out to write a particular style of record and then just come out sounding like myself. You know what I mean? Like, yep. I might be like, oh, I'm listening to these artists and I'm really wanting to mine this territory. And then, you know, I just get back into the songwriting process and then realize that I just have a sound. I kind of made a conscious decision early on that I wouldn't necessarily struggle against that. Like that I'd only take my influences and wanting to create a particular aesthetic in my mind's eye to a particular level. And then if it was that the material was coming out and it was sounding like me and I was still excited about it, I wouldn't fight it. That's kind of what has happened on each project. And so therefore, I don't sort of deliberately try and remain within any one space. And in fact, I really like existing in that space between happy and sad. I remember when I was talking to Robin, the guy that I work with down in Melbourne, who sort of helps me kind of polish up my mixes and kind of reflects on the songs with me and kind of adds things as we go. But he was saying, yeah, you know, I've always kind of like thought that your music is just sits in this kind of happy, sad space, you know, a bit like since I left you, the Avalanches kind of place, like not in sound, but in inflection. And I was glad of that because it was like so much of the music that I do love and loved growing up had that sense of duality to it. It wasn't a binary all or one thing. It was like this kind of complex tapestry of kind of yearning and but positivity at the same time and just sort of like gentle love. And for me, like when I've been involved with the music that sounds like that, that's when I'm at my happiest, when I'm feeling the most excited. I did make one conscious decision with Bring the Daylight. It was that I wanted to sing and tell stories that were true to how I was, look at the world in a different way. And a lot of that way was really to see the best in everything. Although at times Bring the Daylight can sound a little bit emotional and it's a bit ambiguous as to what the intention is, in all cases it's really just a looking for the positive in any situation.
I was going through some old interviews I found online when you were kind of had those first two records under your belt, and I found a statement where you said that you don't really feel as much a part of the Australian music scene more than you kind of feel parallel to it. That was now like a couple of years ago. Do you feel that sentiment has changed at all for you, especially now that you've done that hurdle of the mythological make or break third album?
I don't know how well placed I am to answer this question. I mean, I think one of the interesting things about my kind of trajectory as a musician has been it's kind of been so self-taught, and I've really been lucky to be involved with some great projects and to meet some amazing people along the way. But because I hold down a day job and always have in order to sort of fund like my music career, I've kind of always felt like when I indulge in the music stuff, it really is kind of like my little happy place where I go to. And so I've never really felt like it, this isn't any disrespect to any artists at all. Like, but when I meet musos and that I've been following for ages or whatever, I just freeze up, right? I just feel I'm just a massive fan of the Australian music scene and overseas music scene. Like, just a massive fan. I follow musicians from the very earliest places and take a lot of pride and a lot of joy in their success. So I think in that way, like, I've always kind of felt like I was like on the outside looking in and always just felt like such a big fan and never quite knew what to say or never felt quite comfortable in those kind of circles. Wouldn't go to the parties and stuff because I'd just be afraid that I'd say the wrong thing. But like, to be honest with you, like, everybody's feeling that way, right? I used to let it affect me and therefore I just quite reclusive and I'm still that way, right? But look, I'll leave it to others to kind of have a view on where I sit in the terrain of Australian music. All I'll say is that for what it's worth, I'm still somewhat in the game. I love it. I love releasing records. I'll always release records if I can. And to people who are keen to hear them. And you know, I'm just grateful for, I'm not entitled to an audience, so I'm just grateful to anybody who checks me out.